a busy day this day. Top of the evening to you, and welcome to another hour of Life, Liberty, and all that jazz. I'm your host, Jeffrey Bennett, for the next hour. And, yeah, I've got a pretty full schedule going today. Glad to have you here live on this 22nd day of November 2010, right here on Republic Broadcasting Network. Been an interesting weekend. I spent more time at rest, but also at work at the same time. I badly need physical exercise, but I'm not getting enough of it. And, well, the weather turned cold here over the weekend, so it's out of shorts for a while anyway. Let's get to it. Interesting day in the markets. FBI raided offices of three hedge fund operations today, which began to get Wall Street a little nervous. The Dow Jones Industrial closed down just about 25 points today. The NASDAQ up about 14. S&P 500 down nearly 2. And therefore, it has been interesting. The Dow stands at 11,179. NASDAQ at 2532. S&P 500 at 1198. Global Dow at even 0, 2021. Oil up 26 cents today. We're at $82 right now. And the market for the metals, well, frankly, it wasn't too horribly bad of a day in my estimation. In fact, it's been a resoundingly good day, although in the after hours, gold's dropped $1.80, currently at $1,364.60. Silver off 8 cents at $27.79. Platinum off $4 at $1,657 an ounce, while palladium has dropped 5 in the after hour session at $688. You know, I think that over the course of last week and even throughout the course of the weekend and even beginning this week, obviously the biggest non-news story is the aggravated assault, is all I can call it, going out at the airports in this country. Just in time for the travel season, you too can get felt up. You know, even Saturday Night Live did a whole segment on it. If I were set up with this thing properly, I could actually play the Saturday Night Live transcript, the live transcript, which is so interesting because it opens up with three really sexy gals, kind of the late night thing, talking about how you could, you know, call them to be enticed and have your wildest sexual fantasies met. And then, of course, it says, but 9 chances out of 10, then it goes over to these three TSA guys saying, but you're going to get us taking care of your junk, et cetera, et cetera. It's pretty appalling. We lose our freedoms. We lose our liberties. But as one woman said, I'd rather lose that than get blown up in the sky. Stick around with us. We'll be back after this commercial break.
Fingers up and down my spine. The same old witchcraft when you're...
Extend your life with Extendovite.
After my second heart attack, I knew I needed more help than I had. That's when Extendovite came into my life. Made from garlic, cayenne, and 5 other herbs, I started to feel better in a very short time. My name's Don Wiskin, and I'm here because of Extendovite.
Extendovite gave me more energy than I've had in years. I am the only one in my house right now that's not sick from colds or flus. And I owe that all to Extendovite. My name is Rick, and I'm healthy because of Extendovite. To get your Extendovite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit the website at heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Aerial spraying, chemtrails, the modified atmosphere, heavy metals and pesticides, carcinogens and chemical fibers all falling from the sky. You have a choice to keep your body clean. Detoxify with microplant powder from hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608. It's odorless and tasteless and used in any liquid or food. Protect your family now with microplant powder. Cleaning out heavy metals, parasites, and toxins. Order it now for daily intake and stock it now for long-term storage. Visit hempusa.org or call 908-691-2608 today.
Attention RBN listeners, the Freeze-Dry Guy, providing the finest in long-term storage food since 1970. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. In actual scientific tests, these foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. These foods are delicious tasting, hearty, light to carry, and easy to prepare under the most adverse conditions. Unfortunately, many people building a family food storage program, as well as many companies providing emergency feeding programs, simply do not give you enough protein, especially animal protein. No other food satisfies like animal protein during stressful times. If you're a meat eater, you will definitely want our freeze-dried meats and entrees, but we do offer vegetarian items as well. Visit freezedryguide.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. Freeze Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Feel me, touch me, see me. Good Lord. I thought about that over the weekend. Roger Daltrey, The Who, Tommy, the rock opera. Oh, I thought of many other things. Steve Voss sent me a new piece over the weekend, and I've just not had the time to get it translated into something that was usable for the program yet. There was a song years ago, I don't remember who sang it. No, it's not a big deal. Voss has done a takeoff on the song. You know, a lot of people have done that. They take existing songs, they kind of rewrite it. I've had that ability to do that most of my life. The difference is I'm able to generally do it on the fly. I mean, literally make up words to fit old standards by George and Ira Gershwin and Cole Porter and so many others throughout American musical history. This particular piece that Steve has done, and I'm desperately trying to find it here so I can just share with you what it is. I'm just blanking. I'm absolutely blanking. I don't too often do that, but here it is. Help Me Make It Through the Night. You remember that song? Help Me Make It Through the Night. I don't remember who sang it. Don't care. Steve Voss has a new version of it called Help You Make It to Your Flight. You may be able to find it online. I don't know. I know he's got a video out, which has got some pretty nice-looking women in it, some of whom you'll know. If you don't, that's your problem. But that's not what I'm going to spend my time on today. Time is fleeting when you're doing a broadcast. Last Wednesday, I stepped into some territory that many of you are unfamiliar with, at least for me. We expanded on it on Thursday, and as most of you know, I was away Friday night. We chose to re-air the Wednesday night program dealing with Zionism and stuff of this nature. No, we're not going down that path tonight either, but I thank all of you who sent me emails of encouragement and commentary. Apparently it woke a few people up and they decided to go do some further study on their own and found out that everything I talked about was on the money. So, yeah, that's what we try to do here. Yes, the truth can be told. And the question is, Can you handle the truth? Well, I think that's why you come to RBN, is that you can. 47 years ago today, I was a sophomore in high school. I was at lunch. A very unusual scene took place at our high school, Glenbrook North High School in Northbrook, Illinois. It served both Glenview and Northbrook. That's where the Glenbrook came in. And an automobile was parked in this area out, you know, we'd all kind of go hang out at lunch when we were done eating, just to shoot the breeze and do whatever kids did back then. I don't think I was ever that age, so I don't remember what kids did back then. And there was a car parked there with an awful lot of kids standing around it, and, well, you know where you were on this day 47 years ago. And despite a treasure trove of new information, new questions that have arisen or emerged over this past, I guess it's 46 years, not 47, I apologize. There's many people who still think that President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, they wonder who killed him and why there's so many unanswered questions. There are others who cling to the Lee Harvey Oswald lone nut explanation proffered by the Warren Commission. Gerald Ford was on that commission, by the way. Both groups agreed, however, that whatever the truth, it has no contemporary relevance, but is, it's old hat, it's history, it's stuff for the tinfoil hat conspiracy-obsessed people with nothing better to do. The general thinking is that the assassination occurred almost a half a century ago, so let's let it go at that and move on. And yet, nothing could be further from the truth. James Douglas has written a book published in 2008 by Orbis Books. The book was called JFK and the Unspeakable: Why He Died and Why It Matters. Probably one of the best books ever written on the Kennedy assassination, and deserves a vast readership. Of course, it's bound to roil the waters of complacency that have submerged the truth of this key event in modern American history. You know, it's not often that the intersection of history and contemporary events pose such a startling and chilling lesson as does the contemplation of the murder of JFK on November 22nd, 1963. Juxtaposed with the situations faced by Uncle Reem us today. Now, so far at least, Obama's behavior has mirrored Lyndon B. Johnson's, not Kennedy's, as he has escalated the war in Afghanistan by 34,000. One cannot help but think that the thought of JFK's fate might not be far from Obama's mind as he contemplates his next move in Afghanistan. Gee, I was hoping for a rather brisk fall drive down Dealey Plaza today, but I guess that wasn't meant to be. Now, Douglas in his book presented a very compelling argument that Kennedy was killed by unspeakable forces within the U.S. national security state because of his apparent conversion from a cold warrior into a man of peace. He argues, using a wealth of newly uncovered information, that JFK had become a major threat to the burgeoning military-industrial complex. Now, you remember, it was Kennedy's predecessor, Dwight D. Eisenhower, who warned against this expansion or involvement with the military-industrial complex. And yet, that's exactly what Kennedy inherited. And frankly, the feeling is that he had to be eliminated through a conspiracy planned by the CIA. CIA's fingerprints are all over the crime and the events leading up to it. Not by a crazed individual, not by the mafia, not disgruntled anti-Castro Cubans, although some of those may have been used in the execution of the plot. Why? By whom? These are key questions. If it could be shown that Kennedy did, in fact, turn emphatically away from war as a solution to political conflict did in fact, as he was being urged by his military and intelligence advisors to up the ante and use violence, did he reject such advice and turn toward peaceful solutions? Well, if so, then maybe a motive for his elimination has been established. If, furthermore, it could be shown that Oswald was a dupe in a deadly game and that forces within the military intelligence apparatus were involved with him from start to finish, then the crime would be solved, not by fingering an individual who may have given the order for the murder or pulled the trigger, but by showing that the coordination of the assassination had to have involved U.S. intelligence agencies, most notably the CIA. Our author does both, providing highly detailed and intricately linked evidence based on his own research and a vast array of the best scholarship. And so we are then faced with the contemporary relevance, and since we know that every president since Kennedy has refused to confront the growth of the national security state and its call for violence, one can logically assume a message was sent to all those who followed Kennedy and heeded. In this regard, it's not incidental that former 27-year CIA analyst Raymond McGovern, in a recent interview, warned of the two CIAs, one of the analytical arm providing straight scoop to presidents, the other the covert action arm, which operates according to its own rules. You remember William Casey, don't you? When McGovern was being questioned, he closed by saying, "Let me leave you with this thought. And that is that I think Panetta, current CIA director, and to a degree Obama, are afraid. I never thought I'd hear myself saying this. I think they are afraid of the CIA." And then he openly recommended Douglas's book. He closed by saying it's very well researched, and his conclusion is very alarming. And so, my friends, let us address the history marshaled by Douglas to support his thesis. Oh, and let's not forget the economic aspect of things. We've heard it before, you know, we've talked about it to death. The fact that John F. Kennedy began to combat the Federal Reserve banking system, that which is controlled by the Rothschilds. And the Rothschilds ain't no Southern Baptists, okay? We'll let it go at that tonight. Kennedy took office in January of 61, somewhat of a cold warrior. He was quickly set up by the CIA to take blame for the Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba in April of 61, something that had been inherited from the previous administration. So the CIA and the generals wanted to oust Castro, and in pursuit of that goal, trained a force of Cuban exiles to invade Cuba. Kennedy refused to go along, and the invasion was roundly defeated. The CIA, military, and Cuban exiles bitterly blamed Kennedy, but it was all a sham. Now, Douglas doesn't mention it, and a few Americans know it. Classified documents uncovered in 2000 revealed that the CIA had discovered that the Soviets had learned of the date of the invasion more than a week in advance, and they had informed Castro, but... And here's the startling fact that should make people's hair stand on end. They never told the president. The CIA knew the invasion was doomed before the fact, but went ahead with it anyway. And why? So they could and did afterwards blame JFK for the failure. This treachery set the stage for a number of events to come. Kennedy, for his part, sensing but not knowing the full extent of the setup, fired CIA Director Alan Dulles, who, as in a bad joke, later was to be named to the Warren Commission. Dulles, if I'm not mistaken, was also a holdover from the Eisenhower administration. He also fired Assistant General Charles Cabell, whose brother Earl Cabell, to make a bad joke absurd, was the mayor of Dallas on the day Kennedy was killed. And said that he wanted to splinter the CIA in 1,000 pieces and scatter it to the winds. Not the sentiments to endear him to a secretive government within a government whose power was growing exponentially. And so, my friends, the stage was now set for the events to follow as JFK, in opposition to nearly all his advisors, consistently opposed the use of force in UN foreign policy. Now, in 1961, despite the Joint Chiefs' demand to put troops into Laos, Kennedy bluntly insisted otherwise as he ordered Averell Harriman, his representative at the Geneva Conference, "Did you understand, Averell? I want a negotiated settlement in Laos. I don't want to put troops in." Also in 1961, Kennedy refused to concede to the insistence of his top generals to give them permission to use nuclear weapons in Berlin and Southeast Asia. Walking out of a meeting with top military advisors, Kennedy threw his hands in the air and said, "These people are crazy." He refused to bomb and invade Cuba as the military wished during the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962. And afterwards, he told his friend John Kenneth Galbraith that, I never had the slightest intention of doing so. And then in June of 1963, he gave an incredible speech at the American University, a speech which I have a copy of, the actual audio, in which he called for the total abolishment of nuclear weapons, the end of the Cold War, and the Pax Americana enforced on the world by American weapons of war. And movement toward what he referred to as a general and complete disarmament. A few months later, he signed a limited test ban treaty with Nikita Khrushchev. And in October of 1963, he signed National Security Action Memorandum 263, calling for the withdrawal of 1,000 U.S. military troops from Vietnam by the end of the year, and a total withdrawal by the end of 1965. And all this he did while secretly engaging in negotiations with Khrushchev via the KGB, Norman Cousins, Pope John the 23rd, and with Castro through various intermediaries, one of whom was French journalist Jean Daniel. Now, in an interview with Daniel in October of 1963, Kennedy said, I approve the proclamation Fidel Castro made in the Sierra Maestra when he justifiably called for justice and especially yearned to rid Cuba of corruption. I will go even further. To some extent, it is as though Batista was the incarnation of a number of sins on the part of the United States. Now we will have to pay for those sins. In the matter of the Batista regime, I am in agreement with the first Cuban revolutionaries. That is perfectly clear. Such sentiments were anathema, shall we say treasonous, to the CIA, the top generals. These clear refusals to go to war and Kennedy's decision to engage in private back-channel communications with Cold War enemies marked Kennedy as an enemy of the national security state. They were on a collision course. And as Douglas and others have pointed out over the years, every move Kennedy made was anti-war. This, Douglas argues, was because JFK, a war hero, had been deeply affected by the horror of war and was severely shaken by how close the world had come to destruction during the Cuban Missile Crisis. Throughout his life, he had been touched by death and had come to appreciate the fragility of life. Once in the presidency, Kennedy underwent a deep metanoia, a spiritual transformation from Cold War to peacemaker. He came to see the generals who advised him as devoid of the tragic sense of life and as hell-bent on war. And he was well aware that his growing resistance to war had put him on a dangerous collision course with those generals and the CIA. And on numerous occasions, he spoke of the possibility of a military coup d'etat against him. And the night before his trip to Dallas, he told his wife, But Jackie, if somebody wants to shoot me from a window with a rifle, nobody can stop it, so why worry about it? And we know that nobody did try to stop it, because they had planned it. But The question remains, who killed JFK? Douglas presents a formidable amount of evidence, some old, some new, against the CIA and covert action agencies within the national security state, and does so in such a logical, persuasive way that any fair-minded reader cannot help but be taken aback, stunned, really. And he links this evidence directly to JFK's actions on behalf of peace. And yet he knows, however, that to truly convince, he must break a conspiracy of silence that would envelop our government, our media, our academic institutions, and virtually our entire society from November 22nd, 1963 to this very day. This unspeakable, this hypnotic, collective denial of the obvious is sustained by a mass media whose repeated message is that the truth about such significant events is beyond our grasp, that we will have to drink the waters of uncertainty forever. As for those who don't, they're relegated to the status of conspiracy nuts. Fear and uncertainty block a true appraisal of the assassination. That plus the thought that it maybe just no longer matters. In my mind, all these years later, it still matters. For we know that no president since JFK has dared to buck the military intelligence industrial complex. We know a Pax Americana has spread its tentacles across the globe with U.S. military in over 130 countries on 750 plus bases. We know that the amount of blood and money spent on wars and war preparations has risen astronomically. There's a great deal we know, and even more that we don't, and still even more that maybe we don't want to know, or at the very least, investigate. You see, if Lee Harvey Oswald was connected to the intelligence community, the FBI and the CIA, then we can logically conclude that he was not a lone nut assassin. I mean, come on, the guy wasn't even that good of a shot in the military. They certainly didn't give him the best weapon of choice to conduct the job. And it's been proven time and time and time again with the time frame between each shot. No one could have jacked that bolt, re-aimed, done what had to be done in that quick of a period of time. We've got a wealth of evidence to show from the very start. Oswald was moved around the globe like a pawn in a game, and when the game was done, the pawn was eliminated in the Dallas police headquarters. We will be back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
The Grainmaker Grain Mill. Handmade goodness since 1999. Handcrafted stainless steel and high-quality alloys. There has not been a finer grain mill made right here in the great state of Montana. Hand-operated, the grain mill does it all. Wheat, corn, peanut butter, rye, rice, coffee, beans, flaxseed, all grain types. Make your own gluten-free flour. Experience the satisfaction of providing wholesome, nutritious foods for your family without additives or preservatives. Each mill is handcrafted with manufacturer's lifetime warranty. To order your grain mill, call us at 1-800-724-2719 or go to our online store, republicbroadcasting.org. Take a look at why this grain mill will be passed down through generations.
Are skyrocketing prescription costs draining your budget? If you don't have insurance or are taking medication not covered by insurance, the Powerhouse Savings Card can lower your prescription costs by up to 50%. Now you and your family can save 20 to 50% on all prescriptions. It's accepted by most pharmacies and mail-order pharmacies nationwide. No prescription card is easier to use. Just show your card and save 20 to 50% right on the spot. There are no monthly fees, just a one-time processing fee of only $4.95 for you and your immediate family. Stop paying full price for prescriptions. Stop going without the medication you need because it costs too much. Now your family can get the prescriptions they need at a cost you can afford. Call 1-800-963-0232 now and start saving money with the Powerhouse Savings Card. Call 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232. 1-800-963-0232.
Introducing IXL Anti-Friction Metal Conditioner. IXL works at the molecular level to reduce friction by penetrating into and bonding onto the microscopic openings of the walls of ferrous base metals. The surfaces become smoother and denser, and this reduces the heat, friction, metal expansion, and wear caused by moving metal surfaces. The benefits are reduced maintenance activities and cost, increased fuel efficiency, and prolonged equipment life. It will not clog filters, pipes, injectors, or supply lines, does not build up or accumulate upon itself as do many other additives. IXL does not contain moly, PTFE, or graphites. Also offers the tremendous benefits of being non-toxic. It's used for a friction reducer and performance enhancer in gas or diesel engines, transmissions, automatic or standard gearboxes, turbos, electric motors, outdrives, lathe, and cutting applications. Go to republicbroadcasting.org, then to our online store, or call us at 800-724-2719. That's 800-724-2719.
Clint Eastwood at the piano. Welcome back to our November 22nd program discussing some of the probable reasons for the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy as we remember him this 46 years since his assassination. How that assassination has maybe changed the way the White House has operated since then. Why was Lee Harvey Oswald so tolerated and supported by a government he betrayed? Or did he betray it? After serving as a U.S. Marine at the CIA's U-2 spy plane operating base in Japan with what is known as a crypto clearance. Ever heard of a crypto clearance? It's higher than top secret. But that's a fact that was suppressed by the Warren Commission. Can't make this guy look to be more intelligent than they wanted us to think he was. Well, Oswald left the Marines, defected to the Soviet Union. After denouncing the United States, working at a Soviet factory in Minsk, taking a Russian wife. All during the time which Francis Gary Powers' U-2 spy plane was shot down over the Soviet Union, Oswald returned to the U.S. with a loan from the American Embassy in Moscow, only to be met at the dock in Hoboken, New Jersey, by a man named Spas T. Rykin, a prominent anti-communist with extensive intelligence connections, who, by the way, had been recommended by the State Department. Oswald passed through immigration with no trouble, was never prosecuted, moved to Fort Worth, Texas, at the suggestion of the Dallas CIA Domestic Contact Service Chief, met and befriended by George Demorinschild, an anti-communist Russian who was a CIA asset. There's far too many questions just arising in that I'm sharing with you right now. Of course, Demorinschild got him a job 4 days later at a graphic arts company that worked on maps for the U.S. Army Map Service related to U-2 spy missions over Cuba. If he defected and went over to the Soviets and worked in their factories, etc., boy, we sure welcomed this cat with open arms, or was the purpose to try to elicit information out of this boy? Of course, Oswald was then wined and dined and shepherded around the Dallas area by Demorinschild, who in 1977, on the day he revealed he had contacted Oswald for the CIA, and was to meet with the House Select Committee on Assassinations, Gaetan Fonsi, Timoreshchild allegedly committed suicide. Must have been driving through Arkansas. Well, then Oswald then moved on down to New Orleans in April of 63, got a job at the Riley Coffee Company, owned by CIA-affiliated William Riley. Now, the Riley Coffee Company was located in close vicinity to the FBI, CIA, Secret Service, Office of Naval Intelligence Offices, and, well, frankly, just a stone's throw from the office of one Guy Bannister, a former FBI agent who worked as a covert action coordinator for the intelligence services, supplying and training anti-Castro paramilitaries meant to ensnare Kennedy. And Oswald then went to work with Bannister and the CIA paramilitaries. You see, during this time, up until the assassination, Oswald was on the FBI payroll, receiving $200 a month. Now, you know, $200 a month, I guess, wasn't bad extra chump change, extra pocket change in 1963. But, you know, that fact alone was covered up by the Warren Commission, even though it was stated by the commission's own general counsel, J. Lee Rankin, at a closed-door meeting on January 27, 1964. Of course, the meeting had been declared top secret, its content only uncovered 10 years later after a lengthy legal battle by researcher Harold Weisberg, another non-Southern Baptist. Douglas claims that Oswald seems to have been working with both the CIA and the FBI as a provocateur for the former and an informant for the latter. Their center was Jim and Elsie Wilcott. They worked at the CIA Tokyo station from 1960 to 64. And in a 1978 interview with the San Francisco Chronicle said that it was common knowledge in Tokyo CIA station that Oswald worked for the agency. And so when Oswald moved to New Orleans in April of 63, de Morenschild exited the picture, having asked the CIA for and been indirectly given a $285,000 contract to do a geological survey for Haitian dictator Papa Doc Duvalier, which he never did, but for which he was paid. Ruth and Michael Payne then entered the picture on cue. Douglas, illuminatingly, their author traces in their intelligence connections. Ruth was the Warren Commission's chief witness. She'd been introduced to Oswald by de Morenschild. In September of 63, Ruth Payne drove from her sister's house in Virginia to New Orleans to pick up Marina Oswald, the wife, and bring her to her house in Dallas to live with her. And 30 years after the assassination, a document was declassified showing Payne's sister Sylvia worked for the CIA. Oh, her father traveled throughout Latin America on an agency for international development. That's notorious for CIA front activities. Contract, they did files, reports, all of which went to the CIA. Her husband Michael's stepfather, Arthur Young, was the inventor of the Bell helicopter. Michael's job there gave him a security clearance. Her mother was related to the Forbes family of Boston, and her lifelong friend, Mary Bancroft, worked as a World War II spy with Alan Dulles and was his mistress. And afterwards, Dulles questioned the Paines in front of the Warren Commission, studiously avoiding any revealing questions. Back in Dallas, Ruth Payne conveniently got Oswald a job in the Texas Book Depository where he began to work on October 16th, 1963. Now, from late September until November the 22nd, that dastardly day, various Oswalds are later reported to have simultaneously been seen from Dallas to Mexico City. Two Oswalds were arrested in the Texas theater, the real one taken out the front door and an imposter out the back. As Douglas says, there were more Oswalds providing evidence against Lee Harvey than the Warren report could use or even explain. Even J. Edgar Hoover, who had no use for the Kennedys. He knew that Oswald imposters were used, as he told LBJ concerning Oswald's alleged visit to the Soviet embassy in Mexico City. He later called this CIA ploy the false story regarding Oswald's trip to Mexico, their CIA's double-dealing. Something he couldn't forget. It was apparent that a very intricate and deadly game was being played out at high levels in the shadows. Now, look, there's not a person out there who does not know the fact that Oswald was blamed for Kennedy's murder. But if one fairly follows the trail of the crime, it becomes blatantly obvious that government forces were at work. Douglas adds layer upon layer of evidence to show how this had to be so. Oswald, the Mafia, anti-Castro Cubans, could not have withdrawn most of the security that day. Sheriff Bill Decker withdrew all police protection. The Secret Service withdrew the police motorcycle escorts from beside the president's car where they had been the day before in Houston. They took agents off the back of the car when they were normally stationed to obstruct gunfire. They approved the fateful dog leg turn on a dry run on November the 18th, where the car came almost to a halt. A clear security violation. The House Select Committee on Assassinations concluded this, not some conspiracy nut. Who could have squelched the testimony of all the doctors and medical personnel who claimed the president had been shot from the front in his neck and head, testimony contradicting the official story? Who could have prosecuted and imprisoned Abraham Bolden, the first African-American Secret Service agent personally brought onto the White House detail by Kennedy, who warned that he feared the president was going to be assassinated? You know, Douglas interviewed Bolden 7 times, and his evidence on the aborted plot to kill JFK in Chicago on November the 2nd, a story little known, but extraordinary in its implications, is riveting. The list of all the people who turned up dead, the evidence, the events manipulated, the inquiry squelched and distorted and twisted in an ex post facto cover-up. All of which clearly points to forces within the government, not rogue actors without institutional support. The evidence for a conspiracy organized at the deepest levels of the intelligence apparatus is overwhelming. James Douglas, our author, presents it in such depth and so logically that one hardened to the truth would not be deeply moved and affected by his book. He says it best. The extent to which our national security state was systematically marshaled for the assassination of President John Fitzgerald Kennedy remains incomprehensible to us. When we live in a system, we absorb and think within that system. We lack the independence needed to judge the system around us, and yet the evidence we have seen points toward our national security state, the systemic bubble in which we all live, as the source of Kennedy's murder, an immediate cover-up. Speaking to his friends Dave Powers and Kenny O'Donnell about those who planned the Bay of Pigs invasion of Cuba, JFK once said, "They couldn't believe that a new president like me wouldn't panic and try to save his own face. Well, they had me figured all wrong." I guess that all anyone can ever hope for, in the words of Edward Curtin, let's hope for another president like Kennedy, but one that meets a different end. That which I've just shared with you was written and published today. Actually, I'm sorry, it was published nearly a year ago, November 28th, 2009, penned by Edward Curtin for Global Research. I have, after all these years, continued to not devote my entire life, because there just isn't a damn thing I can do about it, but there are times that I will do that. I will take the time to do further reading. I can't remember the time frame, but I know that we were told that the all the evidence could not possibly be opened in the JFK assassination for something like, what, 100 years after Jackie was dead? Something of that nature. There's too much dirt. Lee Harvey Oswald's record as a marksman in the rifle when he was in the military was no more than a second-class shooter. He was not particularly good, as I mentioned. The weapon that he allegedly used that day is a very cumbersome weapon. It's not all that light. I've held them. I've attempted to fire them. The bolt is slow. It's methodical. It's not very fast. Oh, I suppose you could do some things to goose it up, grease it up a little bit, make it go a little bit faster as far as the bolt action is concerned. But the point is, Lee Harvey Oswald, at least to the best of our knowledge, was carrying a bolt-action rifle. The shots were fired too quickly. I've seen autopsy photographs. I don't think it's humanly possible for those shots to have come from the Texas Book Depository. But I guess that's a story for another day. It's someone for someone else to uncover. It is amazing to me how few of the people who were involved on that day are probably still with us. The sheriffs are dead. The police are dead. The presidents are dead. It just goes on and on and on. I once wrote a piece. Thank you, Lynn. And I just now realized that the piece I just shared with the audience is a year old, so I was right with the 47 years to begin with, and because it was written a year ago. I don't much care when some of these pieces were written. Many, many years ago, I wrote a piece that I pray God somewhere in my archives, I still have it. I had it posted on my website, federalobserver.com, once, but unfortunately, some years ago, as we transferred all of our files over to a new server, about 1,500 columns disappeared. I wrote a column many years ago entitled The Day America Died. And I believe personally in many respects that we were on a death knell long before that day, November 22nd, 1963. But things began to change very rapidly afterwards. It has been reported that LBJ not only made a play for Kennedy's so-called hot young wife, who, frankly, I never thought was so hot, so gorgeous, but then compared to that thing that resides in the White House today, yeah, she was drop-dead gorgeous, but I never could stand the way she talked. As a matter of fact, it didn't dawn on me until many years later. If you listened, close your eyes and listen to Jackie Kennedy doing that tour of the White House with that ditzy little girl voice of hers, and then you close your voice, your eyes, and listen to Marilyn Monroe speak, it all makes sense. Jack Kennedy wanted to have sex with a blonde-headed version of his wife. Just childlike in the way they spoke. But I wrote this piece because I distinctly know exactly where I was standing when I heard he'd been shot. And I know exactly where I was standing and what I was doing for the next 45 minutes to an hour after it was announced that he had died at Parkland Hospital. And I also know how I spent that entire weekend, part of which was spent with a black and white movie camera, taking films of all the activities off of television. We'll be back in just a few moments with some closing comments. Please stay with us.
Much of my life has been spiced with romance. Too many bedrooms.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasemedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
Don't answer it!
If fear strikes your heart when the phone rings, knowing it may be another bill collector, it's time for you to call Zero Debt in 90 Days. 800-477-9256. Settlements, bankruptcy, and attorneys are not the answer and may end up costing you up to 10 times more than necessary. Listen, if you're already in debt, does it make sense to get buried in another payment plan? Zero Debt in 90 Days gets you out of debt in 90 days guaranteed without a payment plan and without attorneys or going to court. Get the fastest relief from debt on the planet when you call 800-477-9256. If you have debt with the IRS, credit cards, student loans, or a foreclosure, we can help at Zero Debt in 90 Days, and we are the only organization to provide written guarantees on the results. Go to ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. That's ZeroDebtGuaranteed.com. Or call now for free information. 800-477-9256. That's 800-477-9256.
Do you need help getting your child to behave? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'm willing to give away thousands of my best-selling total transformation programs for free. All you do is tell us how the program works for you and your family. Did it turn around your child's behavior? Did the screaming and arguing stop in your home? Is he doing better in school? The total transformation has helped hundreds of thousands of families. I want to see what it can do for you, and I'm willing to let you have it for free. Just order my program. Use it with your child, then send me your feedback. I'll refund the purchase price of the program. You keep the Total Transformation Program forever, for free. You don't have to struggle with your child's bad behavior one more day, because now you can try my Total Transformation, and the program will be free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now. 1-800-583-1093. 1-800-583-1093. That's 1-800-583-1093.
Final few minutes. Something for this audience to be aware of, and I thank you. I received an email from several people during the course of this program. Embalmment. I'm quite familiar with that video. I have seen it. Folks, you want to get on Google and begin to look for a video. There is a video out there that claims that the driver actually did the killing of Kennedy, and something you need to take a strong look at. The person who sent this out said they killed Cooper for saying it. William Cooper, they're talking about. I was, I'm not even going to get into it. It's a day from their story. Anyway, I believe sincerely that November the 22nd, 1963, in so many respects, is the day that this nation did die. It set us on a path for which we've never recovered, and I'm not sure we ever can recover. So, thank you for indulging me and allowing me to share not only my personal thoughts, but the manuscript which I share with you tonight. It certainly gives one other thought for the status quo of what we've been told for these past 47 odd years. But then, there's a good number of us that never believed the official BS anyway. Get to it. Hey, quick question, and I got to go. Anybody out there looking for junk silver? After all, this program is brought to you by Republic Trading Group International.com. If you go on the website, Republic Trading Group International.com, look under Treasure Hunt. There's only one of them. Got a half bag of junk silver up there that's going for about $200 under current market value. If you've been looking for junk silver, I've got one half bag available to the first lucky person that either calls 800-691-7898 or sends me an email, gold@republictradinggroupinternational.com. Once again, that's gold@republictradinggroupinternational.com. You can always find it on the website, and more of you are finding it because I'm receiving emails each and every day. We'll be back tomorrow, along with Bob Chapman and John, and Lord knows what else. Because who knows what's going to happen overnight? I may have to run to the airport and get my jollies off tonight. No, I don't work for the TSA, so I must be on the receiving end. It's pretty sickening, isn't it? It's pretty sickening that this nation has been led down this rosy garden path. Don't question your superiors, because if you do, you may find yourself taking a convertible ride down in Dealey Plaza, down in Dallas sometime. Been there. It's a pretty ugly place, honestly. But then so much has changed. Hope you'll stay with us for the rest of the evening. Some good programming coming up. Rick Adams will be up with us here in a couple of hours. I don't have the schedule open, so I'm not even sure who comes up next, but if they're on Republic Broadcasting Network, you'll find it worth your while to stick around. Do so. We'll see what tomorrow brings. Once again, metals had a good day today. They're down a little bit in the after hours. I'm never concerned about that. Buy them, put them away. Pray to God you never need them. And if you do, they're there for you. And, well, I've had enough of all this jazz for one night. Till the good Lord sees fit to bring us together again without apology. I am Jeffrey Bennett.
Oh, I've got the lips that suit my taste. And your fingertips, they cannot be replaced. Oh, baby, what you got, nobody has. And I got you.
Gold, ever climbing.